on her desk. Well, today I am joined with Chris Mowry, who you've very likely seen on the channel repeatedly. Chris and I are going to be breaking down the exact series of events from Pam Bondi saying she has the list to Elon Musk then saying Trump is on the list to the list all of a sudden disappearing.
Doesn't exist.
The list is gone.
It apparently doesn't exist. And MAGA has been having a full-fledged freak out all day long. All day.
You know what's funny about it? Not only is MAGA freaking out about the list not existing, but a lot of them are now like scrambling, tripping over themselves to try to defend Trump and say, listen, I'm sure something reasonable happened.
It's like absolutely egregious. And we see this with so many instances of like Trump, but especially this one. It's like this was such a core part of a lot of the like very, very loyal MAGA people. And for them to just act like, oh, like, yeah, it's fine. There's no list. There's nothing to investigate, as if this wasn't such like a core piece of everything is insane. It's like truly mind boggling.
Yeah, and I was debating some Trump supporter on Piers Morgan earlier. I'm excited to show you that. We'll talk about that later. But this guy goes, I think that some lower level people shredded the documents and the higher level people had no clue. And I was like, if that's the case, then why did Pam Bondi say she had the documents on her damn desk, right?
Right. It's like every single time, if when something good needs to happen or something good does happen, it's because Trump is like the man, he's the master negotiator, he can get anything done. But then if something goes wrong for Trump, the immediate answer is then, oh, well, you know, it's not his fault. There's some deep state above him. It's like, if he does good, the deep state's killed. When he does bad, the deep state, you know, it was out of his control. It's just so, it's like such broken logic always.
They are the deep state now. They are the deep state. Republicans are the deep state. When you get into office and you begin to cover up sexual abuse of children, when you get into office and you start to, I don't know, Trump is starting new wars, pulling us into new wars, covering stuff up brazenly, lying to the American people. They are currently the deep state. And on that panel was Jack Posobiec. He was one of the people at the White House with the binder that said Epstein Files Phase 1. So what we do, or what I do is I'm like, dude, you were used as a pawn by the administration. No one wants to hear about this shit. But what do you think? Do you think the list exists and they're hiding it, or do you think it doesn't exist?
I think there's two possibilities. I think that, number one, the list never existed.
Yep.
It never existed to begin with, and Trump used this entire thing as like a playbook to get elected, which he does with literally everything, mm-hmm. right? He says, you know, he ran an entire campaign off other countries are paying for the tariff. And then as soon as he gets in, he's like, well, there's going to be what he called short-term pain, because obviously that's not how a tariff works. He does this over and over again. So I think there's one possibility that the list never existed and they knew it didn't exist and they just conned everybody like they always do. Or it's possible that the list exists and they ran off this idea that they were going to release it. And then when they got in office, there's then, I guess, two other possibilities, that either A, Trump is all over the list, mm-hmm. or B, these individuals who, like, I think something that's kind of lost in translation a lot, obviously because there's so much going on, is, like, the people who run these agencies are vetted for loyalty first, as we see this hyper-politicization of the executive branch. So, like, they're completely incompetent. So even if it had nothing to do with Trump being on the list, they might have just got in and been way over their head over heels.
That's
they could
what
have,
I think it was.
Yeah, they could have gotten in and been like, holy shit, we didn't realize how, like, much there is here. We actually shouldn't release it for X, Y, or Z. And then they folded.
I think when Pam Bondi was saying, I have the list on my desk right now, she was lying for political gain. Now, I think the list likely exists. We've seen leaks of it. We've seen people come out. There was a court case a few years ago. I think it was either Ghislaine Maxwell or someone else that was involved where parts of the list were revealed. So I think it does exist. I do think the Trump admin was a little bit overly energetic. So Pam Bondi goes on TV and says, we have the list. Alina Haba goes on TV and says, we have this list. It's coming. None of them had even taken a peek at the list. They were just lying, and they didn't realize. What they didn't realize is that Elon Musk was going to come out and nuke this entire narrative that Trump wasn't on the list. Well, the narrative is that he was on the list, but Elon confirmed it. And the timing of it, like, it's such a brazen lie, the timing of it. 2 weeks after Elon Musk says that Trump is on the list, all of a sudden the list is completely gone.
Right. No, exactly. And again, you always, with like groups of individuals like this, I talk to Harry Sisson about this a lot. It's like with MAGA, it's like very like cult-like following. Like eventually, even though it may not seem like it, in due time, you will fall from grace. You cannot keep a lot of these individuals happy when you're just like going through these insane conspiracy theories. So what they didn't realize at the time was not only Elon Musk was going to nuke the whole thing, but eventually they were screwed. They were screwed because they either knew that the list didn't exist or Trump wasn't on the list. And you can lie through your teeth for so long, but the cult following that you've built, this mob mentality of MAGA people, they will bite you in the ass, frankly, if you don't, you know, do what you say you're going to do. So
because you build true believers with any movement. Like, the true believers are the people who will, till the end of the days, believe in the conspiracy theories, believe in everything. And Trump has created a lot of true believers within his movement. A good example that I give is Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell, every time I talk to him at these rallies, he believes every single word that he says. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is probably a true believer. So what Trump has done is he's primed a large majority of the American population to be conspiracy brained. He's like, why don't you believe this conspiracy about election fraud or this conspiracy? So when he creates a base of true believers that are primed to believe in conspiracy theories, and then there's a key conspiracy theory right here. Where are the Epstein files? Right. Of course it's going to backfire on him.
Right. That's actually really interesting. I never really thought about it like that. I think it's interesting to see, because it's in that base of like very true believers. It's so rare to see any of them like truly break out. That's actually something I pulled up before we started the stream. This just happened in like that last hour, so I'll give it to you. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Philip Anderson on Twitter, but he voted for Trump 3 times. He was arrested on January 6th. I have his indictment pulled up. Texas man arrested on felony and misdemeanor charges for actions during the January 6th Capitol breach. He was at the Stop the Steal rally. He obviously did some illegal things on January 6th. And so he was arrested. So this is like a core true. I would define that, you know, when you're at this level as like what you were just talking about, these core believers in the movement. And then just in the last 30 minutes, Philip Anderson tweeting and saying this as I pull it up on my phone. Breaking, the Trump DOJ and FBI has announced they will not give the Epstein files to the public and are closing the matter. Donald Trump just betrayed his own base to such an astronomical magnitude that it is breathtaking. And then he would go on to say, Donald Trump, your legacy is about to become protecting pedophiles and even considered a pedophile to some, calling Donald Trump that. You are humiliating every single person who voted for you by shutting down the release of the Epstein files after promising arrests and all the details. And he's still going off. So like, even in this instance, and just in the last 15 minutes tweeting more about, you know, this core believer of Trump's message at January 6th, arrested for the cause, furious enough to suggest that Donald Trump himself is a pedophile, that, you know, he's betrayed people on a kind of another level. And that's always where you start to get to that core set of believers. When they start to break, interesting things happen. But we'll see. Obviously, you also have a lot of people, running cover for him or running cover. I don't know if they even know they're running cover. They just believe that, you know, some other deep state force was actually the reason that it didn't come out. Donald Trump, again, can solve every problem ever. He's smarter than every person ever. But then when something goes wrong, it's because the evil deep state screwed him over.
It's the eternal victim mentality that I hate. So this is what they'll say. That Trump is like a super powerful dude, right? He can be so strong on tariffs against all these countries, but he's also the eternal victim. So not only is he this big strong man, but he's also being targeted by the media, targeted by the courts. Everybody is targeting him. So MAGA will probably think that he's somehow the victim in this scenario. Like earlier, when I did that panel, I keep talking about this because it was very interesting. Jack Posobiec, the dude, let me show you guys all this. Remember, a few months ago, people went to the White House, certain influencers, and they held these binders. You can't really see it. I wish you could zoom in. But there are binders that they were holding, that they were holding up the Epstein files. Next live stream, we'll be able to pull stuff and put it up on screen. But the same dude who was holding these files, I just debated with, and he told me he got tricked into doing that. He was lying. He was like, they brought me to the White House. They didn't even tell me what I was there for.
That's such a lie.
And they hand me these files, and they push me out in front of cameras.
Such a lie.
And we were sitting there rolling our eyes like, dude, you knew what you were doing. You were still playing defense for Trump. So, yeah, it's this eternal victim mentality.
I cannot wait to see that clip.
It's so good.
That is going to be really good.
For everyone watching, there's a Pierce Morgan coming out. What's up to everyone in chat? Tell us how you're doing today. I can see all your messages. I see Cliff. I see Paula. Here's the situation. Chris and I are starting a live stream show multiple times a week. And what I want you guys to do to help boost this live stream show is to just drop a like. Make sure you subscribe below. Make sure you put some blue hearts in the chat to help boost this stream. Share it around. Chris and I are about to walk through not only what happened in Texas over the past week, we also want to talk about the Epstein files, the hiding of the Epstein files, and this is going to be a consistent show. Like, my question to you all is, if we do this every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, will you guys be here every Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
Yeah, it would be super exciting. Again, obviously, some of you may have seen me on the channel before. Chris Mowry, contributor Chris, some people say. Adam and I live fairly close to each other in the Chicago area, so we've got this studio set up ready to, you know, make something happen like 3 times a week, 5 times a week, some type of live show. And I already see the comments going crazy. Look at you guys. Everyone's saying, yes, we'll be here. You guys truly are absolutely the best. And I already see some people that I know, too. I saw Rhea Raya, Carrie in there from some of my short-form content. So we appreciate you guys so, so much. We're really excited to, like, launch this whole thing.
Yeah, so stay tuned. Back on the subject matter at hand, because we have a lot to cover and not a lot of time to break it down here. The Epstein files were very, very conveniently hidden from the public for the past few months, and now they're gone. Apparently, they are absolutely gone. I guess where I want to bring it is, do you think that they hit him as a direct response to Elon Musk's tweet?
Do I think that they hid them as a response to Elon Musk's tweet?
Or do you think that they're...
Well, the question becomes which tweet? Because this has kind of been a ongoing. Yeah. Like, didn't Elon originally tweet and say, in the big breakup, as they called it, he said, Trump is on the Epstein list.
He said, here's the big bomb, Trump is on the list.
And then he, like, apologized for it, and it fizzled out. And then again, he goes on this whole tirade. Mm-hmm. I certainly think that's part of it. And again, it goes back to this idea that, like, you cannot satisfy people like Elon Musk or, like, this group of, like, cult-minded individuals who, like, they believe in something and they... No matter what the evidence shows, they demand an answer to that. And if that answer doesn't exist, they will tell you that you're being fraudulent and all these things. Definitely think it's possible. What do you think?
I think that, okay, so a few things. Number one, I think Elon Musk is largely playing politics. I don't think Elon Musk was able to sit there, read through the Epstein list. He saw that Trump was on it, and then he wrote that down and thought, I'm going to bring that back up. No. I think Elon is doing his manic, lying thing where he uses his Twitter platform to send lie after lie after lie. Let me caveat, Trump very well could be on the Epstein client list. Like, we've seen leaked versions of the list, but when Elon Musk is just lying on Twitter all the time, I think what he's trying to do is inflict maximum damage on Donald Trump by calling him a pedophile, essentially.
So then is Elon's... I guess that raises the better question of, like, if Elon's doing that, what he just... wants is vindictive or wants revenge. That's his only goal. Or does he have some larger? Because obviously, I mean, we know about all these individuals that are all inherently very selfish. They only care about themselves. They want to enrich themselves. Elon Musk just starts this new America party where he's claiming maybe he's going to run, you know, candidates in certain areas against the Republican Party. So is the goal of him lying on Twitter then just pure vengeance?
I feel like Elon's entire political career has been vengeance. So remember when Biden didn't invite him to that EV summit back in 2020?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people say that Biden not inviting him to that EV summit, or it was 2021 rather, a lot of people say that that's why Elon Musk began to turn right wing. I think there are a lot more reasons, but he is a petty, vindictive asshole. So I think when Trump nuked Jared Isaacman, his NASA nominee, and then increased the debt and did all of this, I think Elon Musk is currently on some sort of drug-fueled rampage. I don't even think that. We know he's on a drug-fueled rampage. I think he was sitting there and said, what can I do to inflict maximum damage to Trump right now? And he tweets that out. Now, is Trump still on the client list? Very likely. I think that if the list exists, then yes. But the thing is, we'll never see it now. And to answer your question earlier, I think the Trump admin is responding to Elon Musk. I think they're saying, listen, Elon is causing a lot of stir about this. We're going to say the list doesn't exist at all.
No, you're 100% right. And again, that's been my take. And I said this on a Twitter space. I was actually on a Twitter live space with George Santos, if you're, you know, obviously familiar with the individual who's about to serve 7+ years in prison for lying to the American people, and some other individuals that you may be familiar with talking about the new America Party. I very frankly told George Santos, I actually didn't really talk to him. He tried to talk to me, and I was like, I don't respect people who lie to the American public, George. I'm not talking to you here. But in that, people were asking me about the future of the America Party, what Elon wants. And, like, to your same vein, I'm like, I don't know that Elon... Like, he's like, we know for a fact he's just on ketamine all the time. He's doing these drugs. Like, he's just gone a little mental, right? Mm-hmm. And he's doing a lot of drugs. So, like, to your point, I agree. And he's always been known. We saw there was another article that I'm trying to remember from just a few years ago where, you know, someone who said he was essentially best friends with Elon Musk and had, you know, proof of it and was like, hey, this is Musk and I's relationship. He said, you know, Musk has always been this guy who, like, it's this constant need to prove to other people that he's this grandiose figure. He can save the world. He's convinced that he's the smartest guy alive, which, again, falls in the same vein. Trump's a narcissist. Elon's a narcissist. So to your point, it's like maybe Elon's just going on these rampages just because he's like, you know, F you. I'm the smartest guy ever. I can save the world. And if you don't agree, then, you know, I'm going to screw you out.
Yeah, I think that. When it comes to the America Party, we should talk about that for a second. I don't see it lasting 6 months. I don't see it ever getting off the ground. Now, someone disagreed with me earlier on the Pierce panel. One of the liberals said, I think Elon's going to carry this through to the midterms and beyond and try to really turn it. I think that he is volatile. He doesn't exactly know what he wants. He doesn't have a steady hand. He doesn't understand political strategy. he is trying to conceive of a new party that solely exists on Twitter, basically. Like, this whole party just exists through Elon Musk tweets. He'll tweet out, where should we hold the opening events? Yeah, yeah. He'll tweet out, what should I wear today? Like, he tweets out everything.
Yeah, no, you're right. It goes back to, like, the same idea that he just believes that he's so, like, intelligent or smarter than everybody else. I agree. Like, people have, again, also been asking me, you know, where does this party go? I'm like, I don't know that the whole America party will be a thing in 3 months or 6 months. He's in over his head. And even if he's so determined to do it, you're right. Like, he clearly is so self-absorbed that he can't even begin to conceptualize how much internal work goes into, like, running candidates, canvassing on the ground, doing these things. And so if he actually fundamentally believes that he's just going to, like, run, you know, 12 House members through different districts, multiple different senators, and he's just going to, like, tweet about it and throw money at them. It's not going to work. It's going to fall flat on his face.
There's a few funny things about it, too. Number one, there's no shot he's ever going to be able to get on the ballot in all 50 states, any of his candidates. I mean, maybe one state, but there's a patchwork of states. So all 50 states have incredibly different rules about how you get on the ballot.
Right.
One state requires 80,000 signatures. The next state requires, you know, half as many signatures, but you need to have at least a year of history, blah, blah, blah. So each state has different, like, hurdles you have to jump over, which is going to make it really, really hard for Elon Musk to do this. But on top of that, he's now leveraging all the same mechanisms that he used to elect Trump to beat Trump. So I look at his vast wealth. He used that to elect Trump. But then also the attention economy that we always talk about. When he leveraged the attention economy via Twitter to get hundreds of millions of views about talking about Trump, he's doing that same thing now. When I go on Elon Musk's Twitter right now, he's tweeted like 100 times today about the America Party, about the Epstein files, about the big, beautiful bill, about all of this. So I think that Elon Musk is leveraging the same platforms, the wealth and the attention economy, to now beat Trump. So it's funny. Like, what's the biblical analogy for this? It's like Caesar and Brutus, or what? There's some story where somebody helps somebody else gain power, and then once they have power, they backstab.
You're 100% right. And again, in this attention economy, like, it's for Elon Musk to own Twitter, it could play to his advantage. But again, if he tries to just throw a bunch of money at this thing, it is going to fall flat on its face. But I'm also curious, in the idea of, you know, him having vast wealth. Again, sometimes I question, you know, not only what Elon's intentions are, but how smart this guy is. Like, a lot of the basis for this is that he passes a bill that, you know, explodes the debt and deficit. The big, beautiful bill that just passed. Obviously, we've talked so much about it on this channel, ripping healthcare away from millions of people, cutting food benefits, SNAP benefits, ripping away a lot of the environmental regulation.
We'll talk about that more, too.
Yeah. But it explodes the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And Elon got in with this idea that government spending's out of control, tried to do Doge. Obviously, it was a complete failure. And so Elon clearly, through his tweets, feels, you know, backstabbed. He's like, well, I'm done with this because Trump decided to raise the deficit. I'm like, dude, you and I could have told Elon Musk a year ago that Trump was going to raise. Was he actually fundamentally under the belief that Donald J. Trump was going to get in office and care about balancing the budget? It's like, I don't know if it almost stuns me, that level of stupidity, but I guess I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe he was a true believer himself. He truly believed Donald Trump's BS. He got caught up in the con, and he thought that he could impact the admin enough to not increase the debt.
Right.
But I think Elon's mad for a few reasons, mainly the debt, but also Jared Isaacman, which was his NASA guy. Trump, like, ripped that NASA nominee away, and Elon Musk crashed out.
I'm actually I'm not as familiar with it.
It was Elon Musk sent out a few tweets when that happened that really tipped everyone off. There was one that was like, fine, if you want to play this way, I'll play this way. It was right after Jared Isaacman. So it's like, okay, people were connecting the dots. It seems like this is what really ticked Elon Musk off. But going back to what you were saying just a second ago, I think that the question of how smart Elon Musk is, that's a really rough one. Okay, this is going to be unpopular. People in the chat are going to instinctively say Elon Musk is dumb and likely one of the dumbest people on the planet. I think that if we want to back up, Elon probably is savvy in certain areas, and that's how he's been able to rise to the level that he is. But he's also very, very not savvy in other areas. Right. So when it comes to politics, he knows nothing. When it comes to even the actual engineering process, he knows nothing. But what I always find myself giving a little bit of cognitive dissonance over, it's like, okay, Elon Musk isn't a drooling idiot. Elon Musk is not drooling all over himself like an idiot. He's the richest dude in the world who has probably lucked out a lot, But I think people, when they call him like a drooling idiot, are kind of missing the point. I think he's smart. I think he knows how to work the back rooms. He did help Trump get elected, but he's an absolute idiot when it comes to politics.
I agree. I'm watching the chat right now, seeing you know, some people agree or disagree. I agree with that, you know, inherently he's obviously not drooling on himself. He understands how to you know, do things like, well, I mean, I guess he got handed a bunch of money from his father and all these things. Like, obviously, he was handed a lot of his wealth, but he figured it out. But to that point, he knows nothing about politics or, you know, anything relating to foreign policy or domestic policy. And that was it's very evident that Elon Musk believes that, because maybe in one vein he understands, I don't know, how to build a company after getting a bunch of money to build said company from his father. Maybe he believes, because he can achieve one thing that is generally impressive, that he just must be able to do everything else. He's a narcissist, right? And we heard this so many times from the other from the people within the Trump administration, the leaks, that when, you know, Trump was getting into the White House in January of this year, that Elon wanted to be a part of every meeting. Elon wanted to, you know, essentially lived at Mar-a-Lago and was always kind of like poking where he shouldn't be poking. And people would often comment that when he was talking about issues or trying to talk to foreign leaders or talk about domestic policy, that it was very clear to everybody in the room he had no idea what he was talking about. He had no understanding of these things, but he like consistently acts like he does. And he actually believes that he just knows everything. He believes that he's smart enough to save the world and all these different things. And that's why, fundamentally, regardless, again, going back to the original point of where the America Party like goes, or if he gives up on it in 3 months or is, you know, steadfast in doing it for a year, it doesn't matter, because he is so narcissistic and in over his own head that he actually believes that he just is the smartest man alive, that he's going to take us all to Mars. That's why we've also talked about the fact that he has, you know, 18 different, I'm trying to think of the exact stat, but it's like 12 different children, at least, with four women. There's more that are certainly not known privately, and he has like a house that he keeps them in Texas. And we've seen back end screenshots of Elon Musk talking about how he believes that it's, you know, his duty to repopulate the earth.
Yep, he's a weirdo.
Yeah, to send he's impregnating all these people, and he believes that he will be able to take that little colony of Musk babies and send them to Mars. It's like, when you start to hear about this stuff, it's like, holy shit, this guy literally believes he's God. And he's not. He's an idiot.
That's the problem.
In most ways.
He's an idiot. I think he is an idiot. This is where the problem lies, is a lot of people claim he's a genius. He has a fan base of people who think he's a genius. He himself will claim that he's a genius when he's just like probably of average intelligence and maybe is a savant in certain areas. Right. Someone in chat said something and there was like, Elon Musk is not a genius. He's actually not even that smart. He's just a savant in certain areas. I don't even know if I'd go that far that he's a savant, but I think that he's just largely really clueless on politics. He has no clue where to go in the political realm, and he's failed his way upwards with a lot of businesses. But I don't know that he's an absolute drooling idiot.
Right.
When it comes to Elon Musk's backstabbing of Donald Trump, how do you think Trump feels now that he saw his buddy, the dude who got him elected, flipping entirely and trying to fund another political party? You know Trump's ass is pissed off.
Right, no, he's furious. He's furious. Again, because he's a narcissist. I think this also draws into the question of, like, how much is Donald Trump cognitively declining? And I think that this is something that we've talked about a lot on this channel. All of us have questioned Donald Trump's general just cognitive ability for, you know, 10 years, 20 years. I'm sure some of you have questioned it far before I was, you know, understanding of what politics were. But now the question becomes that it's getting much worse. He's cognitively declining. He's ranting all the time. So sometimes I question, when you ask a question like, how mad is Trump? I think Trump is furious, but he's becoming so like delusional these days. He's saying to himself, oh, well, Elon Musk is just a loser and backstabbed me, and I'm just going to go live in this kind of false reality that doesn't exist. But regardless, he's consistently ramped up and clearly not happy about it.
Yeah, I think that Trump is... Trump doesn't know what to do, because he met someone that is the same level of crazy and ego as him. Right. Like, Elon is currently crashing out on all social media platforms. And I was actually rather surprised at how restrained Trump was when the original crash out happened. I mean, I know Trump like exchanged jabs back, but Elon went on a whole 2-day tantrum about how Trump was in the Epstein list, and Trump had like a meek tweet in response. So I was like, okay, I don't think Trump knows how to deal with this level of crazy.
I agree. But it also goes back to your original point, which is the reason that they didn't release any of this stuff or kind of took this approach as opposed to anyone else, because again, like either A, Elon knows something, or B, that they don't want to piss him off. Because I pointed out in a video for your channel that, like, very fascinating when the first breakup happened, that Elon Musk says all these things, and no matter who attacks Trump, no matter how loyal they are to Trump, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, if they attack Trump, he goes after them hard. I mean, that's who he is. He's a narcissist. He believes he's the best. And so for him to take that very tame response, almost say nothing about, you know, a few weeks ago when Elon said originally Trump's on the Epstein list, Trump stays completely silent, which is very, it's very interesting.
Yeah, really quickly, if you're just joining the live stream, we have 2,500 people, which is amazing. Chris and I are starting a show every other day where we come in studio, we talk about the news, and we just chat with you guys. We're going to slowly iterate on the setup. We're going to have, the next time we go live, we're going to be reacting to videos, hopefully. Hopefully we have some lighting in the background or some sort of decorations. The point is, Mockler Media is scaling in such a way where we're building in new faces. We're doing new live streams, new shows. Imagine in a week when we have the studio just a little bit more furnished, we have Trump supporters come in to debate them. We debate them over and over and over, and we try to change minds on stream. We talk about Epstein. We talk about, not just about Epstein. We talk about the Epstein list in relation to Trump. We talk about, the flooding. Let's go to the flooding really quickly. And by the way, make sure you check out Chris Mowry on YouTube, on TikTok. Subscribe to his channel. Subscribe to this channel. We're going to continue ripping this live stream. And if you missed it, someone in chat said, hey, we missed it. Make sure you turn on post notifications. Someone said, ew, no debates. I disagree. I think debate is fundamental for America. I think when you have that mindset and you say we shouldn't even talk to people on the other side, then that's when you begin to lose to a degree like we did last election. We can't just shut down conversation. And you guys will see that. So to continue, you guys are going to talk about the flooding really quickly?
Yeah, I was actually pulling some stuff up about that. I mean, first of all, like, incredibly tragic. I think that's the first thing to say. Like, anybody who's been, you know, affected by this, obviously, so sorry. I mean, just unbelievably tragic what we saw and the failures of the Trump administration. I don't understand how it could get kind of any simpler. And I was tweeting about this all day when it happened. You cut, and I was looking at articles. NPR did a great interview in May with a very good meteorologist, very just an expert in the field, I should say, about Donald Trump at that point had fired over 200 people from the National Weather Service. I believe that number is much higher for places like the NOAA, et cetera. But the DOGE cuts, he fires all these people, cuts their funding. And these experts in May are saying this could be really bad. This could cost lives. So then what happens? We have an event like this. We look at the systematic degradation of these places like the NWH and the NOAA, and the warnings, unfortunately, didn't get out fast enough. Something could have been better, and people lost their lives. And so I just think it's unbelievably tragic, and all signs point to, what do you think is going to happen if you cut these agencies, and why the hell are we cutting them?
Yeah, I think that, so a few things. The current death toll is 95 at the time of this live stream. Of course, that's subject to change. As we make videos or report on it, the number will continue to change, increase, because dozens of people are still missing. But obviously, just to start, like you said, it's catastrophic that 95 people have lost their lives. And the position that I keep taking is that Trump could have not prevented any of the actual natural disaster itself. But we do have mechanisms in place to make sure that there's meteorologists coordinating with professionals, coordinating with scientists to send out alerts. So some Trump supporter on Twitter was like, liberals are trying to blame Trump for the flooding. No. We're not trying to blame Trump for the flooding itself. We're blaming him for the fact that we're in 2025 and the infrastructure that we're supposed to have in place to save people's lives has been gutted by an administration that wants to intentionally hurt the public good. So that's the problem there. When Trump makes cuts to the National Weather Service or NOAA or even USAID, it's funny because this perfectly applies to USAID just in a more domestic level. So domestically, we have seen people die simply due to the fact that Donald Trump cut the funding of certain infrastructure. Globally, when Donald Trump cut USAID, we are going to see people die. We already have seen people die. And as the next years and like decades progress, the slashing of USAID will have the same effect of the slashing of NWS. An infrastructure that you don't see every single day, that's there to save you when time comes, not being there when the time actually comes.
No, 100%. And to your point of people saying, liberals are trying to blame Trump for a natural disaster. It takes away from again, what we consistently hear from experts, which, believe it or not, it happens all the time. MAGA never, ever listens to the experts on any issue, whether it's health-related or science-related. All the experts are in somewhat of agreement. I'm appealing to authority, but in somewhat of agreement of this conversation.
Did you see the MAGA person running for Congress that was like, fake?
Yeah,
from Georgia.
I actually have that pulled up. I just uploaded a video on that last night, if you want to check it out, Christy Mowry. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Yeah. But again, the systematic degradation of these agencies cannot be overstated. We have spent so much time, experts have dedicated their lives to trying to figure out how we can warn people just 10 seconds faster, 30 seconds faster, a minute faster. Specifically, I've read a lot about, you know, tornadoes and in the United States, working tirelessly to just get the warnings to be a little bit better. These can save lives. And so when you talk about, you know, the first flash flood warning for this event came in, I believe, 3 to 4 hours before we got confirmed information that there was emergency, extremely deadly flooding. And you look at 3 to 4 hours, it's 1 a.m., midnight, somewhere around there. Take that with a grain of salt. But it's on a systematic level, like, that has to be better. It just has to be. And we've spent so much time funding these agencies, or at least trying to fund scientific communities, give grants to figure out how can we make it better to save lives? How can we push that four-hour time frame to an extra hour? And obviously, if you cut funding and you fire a bunch of people and everybody's overworked, it's not going to go that way. But to your point about the MAGA lady from Georgia, yeah, absolutely insane.
They're so anti-science. Then Marjorie Taylor Greene came out. I found this one to be really hilarious. You could talk about that because you're from Georgia. But, like, she basically was like, you can read off the post if you have it up at some point. But she said something to the effect of, I'm going to introduce a bill to stop certain chemicals from being released into the atmosphere that change the atmosphere. And it's like, congrats, you've arrived to climate change 20 years after the rest of us, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Right. No, exactly. And, like, again, those two things, I have it pulled up on my phone. Those two things happened in the same vein. You had this MAGA congresswoman who is running in Georgia's first district. Again, I was born and raised in Georgia. I've lived there pretty much my whole life. And you have her essentially sending out this tweet saying, fake weather, real damage. Hurricane Helene left me powerless for 16 days and caused $57,000 in damage. This isn't just climate change. It's cloud seeding, geoengineering, and manipulation. If fake weather causes real tragedy, that's murder. Pray, prepare, and question the narrative. She got pushback and basically doubled down and said, well, liberals are not going to scare me into not telling the truth. And it's like, I don't know. I remember I was born in 2002. I was pretty young when Barack Obama was inaugurated. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking that, you know, and looking at a man like Barack Obama, who is so, so many levels of inspirational, charismatic, you know, spoke with such grace, all these things, and thinking, wow, this is, the political landscape is so impressive. And now, as I grow up and I'm 23, you have, like, we're literally sitting talking about a woman running for Congress who previously ran for governor in Georgia, talking about how weather is manipulated by the deep state. And within 24 hours of this, to your point, Marjorie Taylor Greene says she's going to introduce a bill to Congress to stop to make weather modification illegal. I'm sorry. Now I'm getting, like, ramped up.
No,
I just
don't ramped up.
I just don't understand. My goodness, Teresa, thank you so much for the
Teresa said, you are amazing. Best of luck with Mockler Media. Looking forward to the debates. That means more than you know. You, the debates will be good. And Tammy May, thank you for the donation. More than you know. These donations are going to be used to help build this studio. So we really do appreciate that. By the way, after this live stream, we're doing a members only show just for 15 minutes where we talk about how we got here, how we started this. So thank you guys for being here. First of all, if you guys want to be here for the members only show, you can either become a member, you can gift other people memberships. And one more time, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Central, we're going to be doing live streams over and over and over. This is going to be, I personally believe, the show that we're building the groundwork for right now, heading into the midterms, will be one of the bigger political shows.
I agree.
Think about Tim Pool. He always brings in liberals in studio and Trump supporters in studio, and he has them debate or whatever. All of these right-wing shows have people in studio doing sort of like conversations, debates. I think we're going to be starting a version of that on the left that is unparalleled. Because what Tim Pool always does is he'll basically, like, tilt the tables against somebody. So when our friend Luke Beasley went on Tim Pool's show, it was a 5v1 against Luke Beasley. We're not going to do that. But if we bring in a Trump supporter and we're able to have our own little Tim Pool show where we're like, hey, why do you believe this? How can we change your mind? Right. I think it'll be powerful.
No, I agree. By the way, Depressed Ninja Turtle in the chat, what a name. Appreciate the kind words. You guys are all so amazing. Again, to your point is, again, like, there's so many veins to take from what you just said, or so many routes to take, I should say, from what you just said. You know, we could have people in the studio talking to them. We could have families in the studio. Yep. We could have people calling in. There's so many like cool things to do with a setup like this, and I agree it's going to be
anything.
Yeah, anything.
And someone said, sorry to cut you off. Someone said, bring Dean Withers. We could know him. We could bring Dean Withers in. Bring Dave Smith.
DJ, thank you so much. Really appreciate you.
That means more than you know.
The idea being though is that like there's so many creative routes to take from this, and the goal of this, you know, starting at 3 days a week, guys, is to just build it up, do some really cool stuff, and compete against, you know, that MAGA machine.
Not just compete, but beat that.
Beat
MAGA
them.
Machine.
That's right. That's
going
right.
Back to the NWS. A lot of people are saying, don't politicize this. The Trump supporters were saying, guys, why do liberals turn everything political right away? I'm like, mother effer, we'll cuss later on the show. Motherfucker, it's like, dude, Trump came out the day after the Potomac plane crash. What did he blame it on? DEI.
Right, that's right.
Obama and Pete Buttigieg.
Biden, I'm sorry. Sorry to cut you off. Trump has never, ever not used a natural disaster or a horrible event where people have lost their lives to, he has never not taken that opportunity to make it political, mm-hmm. to instantly politicize it. I mean, that the plane crash that we saw in DC was so unbelievably tragic. Mm-hmm. Everybody lost their lives. It was so sad. You hear some of the stories about the people on that plane, and literally, almost instant that night, talking about it, Donald Trump, with no information in front of him, just blames DEI and then blames that quote DEI on the Biden administration. It's like, again, cut me a break with any idea that anybody is politicizing these things except Donald Trump himself, always.
Every single thing is politicized. Think about the California wildfires. Think about that. Over and over, Donald Trump called Governor Newsom new scum over and over about the wildfires. Everything is political in their world. Yet when there is a flood, and we're not even saying Trump is fucking God who caused this flood. We're just saying Trump took money away from the services that help prevent people from dying, that help alert people. And that's what's absolutely disgusting about it all. So conservatives don't want to be held accountable. They don't want us to mention that Donald Trump defunded the NWS or the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration or any of these admins that help, you know, coordinate with meteorologists. It's disgusting.
Right. And I just like just two quick articles again to like when they say we're politicizing it, it's like we have heard this over and over again. This is an article I posted about from May 13th, titled How Trump's National Weather Service Cuts Could Cost Lives. Weather experts that are cited in the article and quoted warn that staff cuts at the National Weather Service that have been made by the Trump administration are a danger to public safety as tornadoes, hurricanes and heat loom this spring and summer. That's from May. So again, we're not saying that Trump, you know, again, caused this flood. But when you see articles like this over and over and over again, another one from late May, different, completely different NPR. Ahead of hurricane season, the National Weather Service is reeling from DOGE cuts. And they interview somebody at the National Weather Service saying we're understaffed, we're really struggling. And Donald Trump cutting the funding and, you know, taking a sledgehammer with DOGE, firing hundreds of people from the NWH is going to cost lives. It's like, it makes no sense. The fact that they actually fundamentally believe that we're politicizing something like this. We're trying to save lives because the people in Texas don't deserve that type of outcome. No American deserves that type of outcome when we're supposed to be, you know, what people consider the greatest country on earth or the richest country on earth, however you want to phrase that. We're obviously we're the United States of America. And the fact that we're having a conversation about funding these services, we're having conversations that, oh, we could have prevented tragedy from, you know, a natural disaster. It's like, we have to be better.
Have you ever considered that these conversations are woke?
They're woke. Yeah. We're having woke conversations about weather, Adam.
About saving people's lives.
That's right.
Yeah, we would never want to politicize something that isn't political. Or like the hurricane itself is apolitical. Like not the hurricane. The flooding itself. I don't know why I said hurricane. The flooding itself is apolitical. But the mechanisms that we have in place to respond to that flooding, that's inherently political. That's based on the political systems of every state and every single country. So Trump undermined those mechanisms. And like you said, you were reading articles that say, hey, we're struggling here. There is one Florida weatherman 4 months ago. I'm sure you saw this.
He
goes on air and he goes, I can't do this anymore. I can't report it accurately. And by the way, y'all, next time we do one of these streams, we're going to have a setup where we can play videos for you. We don't know if it's going to look like a screen here or an overlay here, but the point is, this is episode one of a long live stream that we will continue to iterate on. Someone asked, how do I become a member? If you're subscribed to the channel, you can click join at the subscribe button. Most 99% of the content will be free, everyone. Someone said, is all the content going to be member paywalled? No. The content will all be free, But sometimes to help fund and support the show afterwards, we'll just do members only streams for just 10 to 15 minutes. Other than that, everything will be free. Someone says, is the studio in Chicago? It is. Also, members get special Adam Mockler emojis. Can you guys, if you guys click on the emoji button, you guys get emojis of my face. It's kind of cute.
You have your own face emoji.
Who wants a Chris emoji?
That's right.
Who wants a Chris emoji?
Can we get some Chris emojis?
Okay, back to the subject matter at hand. We will make Chris emojis, don't worry. Things will evolve, as Cynthia says. And yes, the guy I'm talking to is Chris Mowry.
Yep. And also members only, you know, it might be 10, 15 minutes, but again, a lot of creativity there. Maybe Adam and I go out sometimes in Chicago. We have a little bit of fun. Maybe
we'll go live.
Yeah, we can go live out with adventures. With. Maybe a Friday night it gets late. It could get crazy. So yeah, all that support, really, we appreciate
it. Who's ready for the 4 a.m. members only blackout drive?
Yeah, that's going to be right. That's going to be, wow, we're going to be right. Well, that's the problem. When you and I go out, even when we are having fun, we're so obsessed with politics that we just end up either arguing with people or talking about it ourselves, politics. So like, that would be something that you and I look at each other on like a really late, I know so many of you have had those late nights, 3 a.m. where it's like, dude, we should go live and talk about how much Donald Trump sucks. It's not good, but.
Yep. So
Vicky, thanks for joining us.
Vicky, a new member. Kayla, thank you guys so much. By the way, the content will always be free, free, free. I post 8 free videos a day and we do free live streams. The members only is just a support mechanism. You don't have to. But going back to the subject matter at hand, and yes, we will tell stories about our Chicago experiences. And no, we don't get blackout drunk at 4 a.m. That was a joke. So going back to this, okay, not funny anymore. Okay, just to be serious for 1 second.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
change the vibe.
Yeah, yeah, no, for real though. Like the current death toll is 95 in total. Republicans are rather quiet about this, and something that I've noticed is it feels kind of like Democrats are scared to blame this on Trump. I don't mean us, but I mean some of the politicians I've seen do interviews, and someone was on Fox News. I'm not going to name the politician, but this politician was asked, why do you think this happened? Like, what could have been done differently? Rather than even naming Trump, he says, we have to look into this. It's like, we really don't know what happened here. Listen, I totally understand being a politician and having to take a responsible stance. Totally, 100%. But it's pretty responsible to point out directly that this was caused due to Donald Trump's slashing of the funds. So when we have top Democratic leaders who are like too scared to call Trump out on this, and there are 22, 23-year-olds in Chicago who will call Trump right. out, we have a problem with leadership in the party. And that's from somebody who supports the party.
No, I agree 100%. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. I 100% agree with what you said. And I think simultaneously, there's families in this instance, but also just Americans in general, deserve a leader who will have even an ounce of leadership skills, right? Donald Trump, at the bare minimum, could have come out and said, well, our initial thoughts are this, we're looking into it, I'm really sorry, or this is kind of how we're taking accountability, like any type of leadership quality that we know Donald Trump doesn't have. And so in this void of like any type of accountability where the leader of the free world is just going to come out and be like, it wasn't my fault, it was his fault. The families deserve better. Americans deserve better. And I wish that from our party officials that regardless of politically, they would at least fill that void and try to say, we're going to find answers. We're going to hammer the Trump administration to find answers. We think that, you know, again, it could have been because of the cuts to the National Weather Service. But I agree. Elected Democrats have to be, from top down, our party leadership has to be able to punch back harder. They have to. And right now, so much of that punching back is being done by, you know, a 23, 22-year-old in a Chicago studio. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. We need some Democrats that are going to punch back.
Yeah, and punching back doesn't even mean being Trump. Like, we don't have to come up with Trumpian type nicknames for people. A lot of times I get asked on shows, like, what do you mean by punching back? And what I always say is, like, listen, we don't have to be assholes who come up with conspiracy theories, but I kind of like it when political knife fighters go for the jugular with Republicans. Yeah. Jasmine Crockett, I call her a political knife fighter because it's somebody who can go out there and just, like, fight a little bit. AOC, political knife fighter. Gavin Newsom, you know, a year ago, I wasn't as sold on him as like a leading member of the Democratic Party. Of course, he's a very high-level politician. I wasn't as sold a year ago, but this recent saga, the about ICE, the ICE saga, that actually really won me over on Newsom and his ability to punch back. I don't know if he'd be a good candidate. I think he would be a good candidate, but listen, Republicans would just say, do you want your state to look like California?
Right.
And that would be like the Achilles heel.
Right.
Even if California is nice, that would be the Achilles heel. So the point is, as new leaders rise throughout the party, like Zohran, Lord have mercy. I don't agree with that dude on everything or how he wants to get to everything, but I agree that we need to fight for the working class and that his style of communication and politics amazing. It gives me so much hope.
And look, to your point about like what does punching back mean, I think I kind of have a unique perspective on this. I just uploaded a video 2 or 3 days ago to Instagram and TikTok that did pretty well, where I'm basically screaming. Kind of, people have seen me, maybe if you see me on this channel, I get ramped up. These are things I'm really passionate about, and I will just call it how I see it. And a lot of the response on Instagram as I posted this video that did fairly well was like, wow, it is so refreshing to see anybody, any Democrat, any person against Trump just do that, kind of like going for the, showing passion, showing you believe, showing authenticity. And that's what punching back means. To your point about all the people you just mentioned, is like in this environment, people are craving authenticity. They're craving people who believe what they say, whatever that is, as a lot of our politicians lack that level of authenticity. Even Democrats who are good at what they do struggle to, they struggle with being too like political, or they struggle to just kind of call it how they see it. And a lot of you that are watching this right now are equally as furious about everything going on, are thinking about it, are doing your part, and you need somebody to resonate with that. And so that's what part of the punching back is whoever it is, whether it's Mamdani or Gavin Newsom or Jasmine Crockett, anyone from this political spectrum. When you see somebody just call it how they see it, be authentic, you believe in something, and you can feel the passion, it's really big. It's going to, in my opinion, be absolutely critical for us, whoever the nominee is in 2028. I know it's a long way away. For that individual, you might not agree with them on every position. You might, he or she may not, be the most experienced person, but I fundamentally believe that person, whoever it is, will be incredibly authentic and be able to give that punch, because people need to be able to feel it.
Yeah, I think that Democrats have lost a lot of that authenticity. We give a lot of scripted, canned answers, and say what you want about Trump. We obviously disagree with him on every single policy position, but when he goes on the Theo Vaughn podcast, for example, and I think he did a 3-hour set with Theo Vaughn. He did 3 hours with him. The 3 hours was rambling, incoherent nonsense, but it gives off a vibe to voters that he's able to like sit there and withstand hard questions. And sometimes the Democrats just came across as too scripted. And that's not me saying that Trump is better. I'm just like trying to give the objective analysis on where Democrats went wrong. Really quickly, someone in chat asked that donation from Jolish. What are your all's thoughts on Pritzker? Should he go for the top? How is he for Illinois? I love Pritzker. He's a good knife fighter. We should have named him.
I agree. I agree. I love J.B. Pritzker. In terms of like how Illinois is, I'm so new to this state. I've only lived here, 6 or 7 months. So I'm actually still doing like a lot of work just in my own downtime I keep losing my train of thought today. To be more interested in Illinois' local politics. I'm so familiar with Georgia, so I'm not familiar with some of the issues in Illinois, but J.B. Pritzker is fantastic, and also a knife fighter, somebody that we've heard from other people, inside sources, that like he wants to take a bigger role in the party because he cares so deeply about what's going on. And again, I will continue to scream, and we'll see how this plays out in 2028, that it's not going to be an ideological thing. It's not between liberals or leftists or policy. It's about people who fight versus do not fight.
Yes.
It's about people who are authentic versus are not authentic. And to your point, Donald Trump is viewed, and I consistently say this, as the most authentic, inauthentic person to ever exist.
Yeah.
People view him fundamentally, I talk to Trump supporters all the time, as incredibly authentic. Now, obviously, we all know that he's like a pathological liar and lies every time he takes a breath. But this idea that in the attention economy, if you are viewed as authentic, which I'd obviously hope that's because you are authentic, it really resonates in a time. We just need people who care. We just need people who care about where we're going.
Yeah, someone in chat pointed out that the Substack chat seems a little bit slower. If you guys haven't subscribed to the newsletter, go to adammockler.com. We are currently live on Substack with 600, YouTube with a little over 2,000. So it's absolutely amazing. You guys are the best.
Really quickly, yeah. Cynthia in the chat. No, it's a good question. Lies are authentic. That's insane. It's weird. He's like, there is some correlation here between people like Donald Trump, and I've said this, it's very odd, you may disagree with it, between some of the reasons Trump won and Mamdani won. It's very odd, but it's both in the same vein of like people view both of these individuals as authentic. Obviously, Donald Trump is the last thing from authentic, but people perceive him as
he's authentically stupid.
He's authentically inauthentic.
Yeah, okay.
It's like weird. Exactly. I don't know.
He's authentically stupid. And the thing with Trump is that people view him as a change agent, a change candidate, right, where they think he's going to come in and shake up the system because of the way he speaks. Like, oh, this guy speaks like me. He's going to change up the system. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris, who I thought ran a great campaign, she wasn't viewed as the change candidate. Objectively, she was viewed as the establishment candidate. She was asked, what would you do differently than Biden? And she said, like, not much or something like that, which that hurt her campaign. So Trump is viewed as a change candidate, and so is Zohran Mamdani. Right. A lot of people who voted for Zohran, I bet, don't agree with his full policies. How are we going to fund some of these policies? But the thing is, he's energetic. He can fight back. He's charismatic. When it comes to Trump being authentic, because some people still are saying, like, hey, that's not true. When we watch these, like, two-hour speeches where he's rambling and ranting and shit like that, to us, we know that it's lie after lie after lie. But to people in the audience, they think this is like a beautiful, flowery stream of consciousness. Right. And they think they're being let in the home of like a famous person politician. Right. Whereas if Kamala gave a speech, people would think, okay, that was good. Whoever scripted that did a great script. But they think with Trump, okay, he's basically letting me into his thoughts.
Right.
This is authentic. That's what people think.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I think still alive. Thank you so much for the donation.
Still alive.
Very well said. Perfectly said. People view him as more authentic, partly because he doesn't talk like normal politicians. And again, it's like you feel like you're being invited into something or you're getting like a behind the scenes look. And I want to be clear. Obviously, this is like one, very small aspect of this. Like, I'm not obviously not trying to compare the main aspects of someone like Mamdani to Donald Trump.
There's the same person.
Right. There's obviously a lot of big reasons that Mamdani won and the policies that he ran on. So I just want to be clear. I'm not trying to break it just down to solely like media or how you appear, but it is interesting in that small little section how there is kind of some like similarity.
I think people on our side underestimate the extent to which people find Trump charismatic. I'm just going to say that. I think in chat sometimes, and not you guys, but like in the comment section sometimes, people are like, how could anybody listen to this extremist pathological liar? Which I get. His voice sucks. He lies all the time. But in order to understand how we got here, you have to understand like a lot of Americans think that that authenticity is cool. And we've made that same point a few times. But
no, you're right. For the record, every single time I watch Trump, I've started to do this thing where, you know how there's like statistics about every single time you like one cigarette takes like 30 minutes off your life.
Yeah.
I'm pretty convinced that like when I've watched, you know, you and I have both had the experience of watching a full 2-hour Trump speech. Mm-hmm. I feel like there can be like similar psychological studies of like that definitely just like shredded my life by 6 hours. Cause it's actually so dumb and incoherent. It like hurts my brain.
We're actually a bit worried about my grandpa. During Trump's first term, my grandpa was glued to CNN all the time, glued to the TV. This was before My Touch existed. Yeah. I'd say before this digital media space was so big. People were glued to the TV, or my grandpa was glued to the TV. When Biden was in office, my grandpa slept at night. He would still be pissed off and be like, fucking Trump, I hate this guy. But when Trump won, of course we were all shattered. But the next day I remember being like, grandpa, we got to get you off of like television.
Yeah.
Either go on YouTube and watch stuff or just pay less attention. There's no reason for you to be watching every single Trump speech that happens, grandpa.
Like, sorry, didn't mean to
cut you're good.
No, I was going to say like exactly that. Again, always make sure you're taking breaks because this is a really hard time. And a lot of people's lives for other reasons and adding to the political nonsense, if you have the ability, I know it's easy to say as maybe someone more privileged in society, but if, you know, take 3 or 4 days off, do something kind for yourself. You deserve it. Somebody in chat, Joe, again, thank you so much for the donation, asked what do we think of outside figures like Mark Cuban? Like a similar to like outside figures for the party, I assume.
Really quickly, when someone mentions Pritzker, since we only have 2,000 people here watching, I'm gonna say I think there's a non-zero chance we get Pritzker in studio at some point.
That would be insane.
It's not gonna be like this month. It's not gonna be like next month. I mean, the studio is still being built. We have nothing on the wall behind me yet. We need something on the wall. Yeah. But I think there is a non-zero chance Pritzker comes in and we have a chat with him. Someone asked about, Mark Cuban is what you were saying.
Well, I think they asked, Joe, again, thank you so much, about, you know, how do we feel about outside figures? But all right, last question, then I'll chill. No, don't apologize. Thank you so much. Thoughts on outside folks like Mark Cuban?
I love Mark Cuban. I love Mark Cuban as an influence. I love Mark Cuban as a businessman, as like a person who's out there. I don't think he should run for the Democratic nominee. I don't even think he considers himself a Democrat. He just campaigned for Kamala, and he calls himself an independent. I don't think we should be plucking more billionaires and placing them in the Oval Office just because we think that they're a good businessman. I do think Mark Cuban has some interesting ideas on AI and on stuff like that, but it's the same thing as when people ask me if Jon Stewart should run in 2028. I'm like, listen, I love Jon Stewart. I love The Daily Show, but I want to move back to a vibe where we're not electing celebrities just because they're celebrities.
I agree 100%. I think that's a really good take. But I do think that like there is some use in general to like, it's good to have people like Mark Cuban or other people who clearly like, you know, I definitely believe Mark Cuban. Obviously, like, I've never spoken to him. I don't pay nearly as much attention to him as other political figures, but I like to believe he cares about where the country's going. He wants to, you know, try to help in ways. And I think if you bring some of those outside figures kind of in this Democrat bubble, it could certainly help people mm-hmm. feel that, like, again, as we have questions about how authentic Democrats are, or they struggle with this kind of like messaging.
He's authentic.
Right, exactly. So when you bring in some of these outside figures to kind of talk about things or help guide Democrats, sure. But I certainly think that what you just said is absolutely true. I would like to not elect celebrities. I know there's a lot of conversation I've heard about like Stephen A. Smith. Mm. And again, my conversation becomes like, one of my fundamental problems always with Trump was that this guy has no experience, so he shouldn't lead the free world.
Yeah.
And so as bright or kind as some of those individuals are, I would like people who are experienced.
Eminem and Dr. Dre 2028. That'd be a pretty good ticket.
That's right.
Adam, please shout out my friend's GoFundMe. He lost his car in his home. You didn't link it. I can't see it. But so the thing is with Mark Cuban, a lot of people in chat were saying, no thanks. He's not a good... What you have to understand is that Mark Cuban has done more for healthcare than any Democrat since, I'd say, Obama. Obama passed the Affordable Care Act, of course, but Mark Cuban has created he's used his wealth to create a new website where it lowers prescription drug prices. You know about that, right?
Yeah.
Where Mark Cuban has created this whole infrastructure where he has lowered prescription drug prices. So someone in chat was like, does Mark Cuban even really care about us? I would argue, I think Mark Cuban has used his wealth for altruistic reasons. Thank you so much for the gifts. Hayden, can you click on those memberships? By the way, everyone, shout out producer Hayden for doing an amazing job running the live stream. Crystal, thank you so much for the 5 memberships. Brozier, probably impossible, but does it feel like millions of people signed... Can you pull that up? You're good. Probably impossible, but does it feel like millions of people signed a contract stating no matter what Trump does or say, we will not abandon him? That's what it feels like.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
all of the Tucker Carlson or like the, I guess Tucker's flipping now, but yeah. All of those MAGA figures, a lot of the voters too.
I actually want to talk like briefly because I'm sometimes very interested in the psychology of that. And we talked about it earlier. And for the record, some people can chime in on this because I'm 23 years old. So some of the things I'm going to talk about happened before I existed, but they've done studies before about why some people after 9/11 mm-hmm. became such intense 9/11 truthers, conspiracy mm-hmm. theorists, and previous to this event, they were not. But then, you know, something changed, and they actually studied the brains of these individuals. You know, mental health psychology is kind of aside. I'm very passionate about it. And what they found was that actually what ended up happening for a lot of these individuals is when the human brain you know, has to deal with very hard questions about like the society you live in. You don't realize how often you walk around every single day and say, I'm safe where I live. I'm secure where I live. The government is not out to get me. All these different things that are fundamental to your daily life. When those things that are fundamental start to get questioned, it can raise a level of anxiety that is so intense for some people that they actually, what they found was that your brain will turn to conspiracy theories to try to protect you from that anxiety. So what they found, some people after 9/11 were so scared about these fundamental questions, understandably saying, wait, what if I'm not secure where I live? What if the government can't protect me? What if there are people out to get me? I've always lived under this impression that I'm safe here. And instead of having to face some of those hard issues, their brains, because of that amount of anxiety and fear that brought, decided to say, let's create a conspiracy that the government did this. So that way you kind of are insulated. You believe, oh, they're not coming after me. I am safe where I live. This was just a specific event, et cetera. And I actually correlate some of that to what we see with Trump people now. If you are so deep in this fundamental belief in life that how the government works, how the deep state may or may not exist, how Donald Trump is a good person and cares about you, and you've held some of these very core beliefs for a long time, when you start to deal with like the reality that actually Trump isn't the person I thought he was, actually maybe Republicans have been lying to me this whole time, that really can start to break down your fundamental understanding of how our society works, how our government works, and where you live. And instead of dealing with that level of stress, some people's brains will just force them into a deeper conspiracy. And that's why I think there is a core group of people that will just never give in. I know that was a long rant. You let me know what you think.
No, the JR really quickly said, Adam, Chris, Dean, and Parker, all of the other Gen Z platforms I have subscribed to show me time after time how on top of these stories they are. It amazes me the levels of energy that is needed and expended in order to do this. For that, I'm grateful to every one of them. Well, guess what, Jay?
Dude, Jay, thank you so much.
We are eternally grateful
thank you.
For you, for all of you, for allowing us to, number one, have the resources to enact and execute on this studio, but number two, for being here as we continue to build the studio. To build on top of your rant, what MAGA does, what other people do is they, like, what cult leaders do is they intentionally prey on people who are going through hardships in life. So you can look at the Jim Jones cult. What Jim Jones would do when he made his church, it was the People's Temple is what they called it. The People's Temple was designed as like a charity thing to help people out who were going through a rough time in life. So if you were like struggling with money, you were struggling to find a home or to get a job, Jim Jones, who was, you know, a very well-liked pastor in the area, would come and help you. But he was also preying on you. So what Trump has done, to build on what you're saying, is preyed on some of the most vulnerable, impressionable, easily radicalized minds in our society and turned them into complete whack jobs. And a lot of these people either would have gotten pulled into another conspiracy hole or would have done something else. But Trump is now milking that and selling cologne to them for some reason. Selling shoes and cologne.
Right.
But like,
it's really well said.
Really quickly, there was this one documentary. Your rant was awesome too. Like, that's, I'm just trying to build on top of that.
No,
now.
You're fine. That was
so
really
so. There was this one documentary from Channel 5, Andrew Callahan, named Dear Kelly. You know the Channel 5 dude, right? Mm-hmm. And he was saying,
Brent, thank you so much.
Oh yeah, thank you so much for the donations. So he was basically Leslie. Thank you. We read that one. Okay. He was basically, where was I?
Sorry.
Oh,
my bad.
No, I forgot where I was going with that. Not Jim Jones anymore. Oh, Andrew Callahan documentary. He finds some dudes that got like trapped in this conspiracy hole. And Andrew Callahan tries to trace it back to when that started. And it's because the guy lost his house in 2007. When he lost his house, there was this lawyer. The lawyer that like ended up doing the foreclosure or whatever also knew like someone in the guy's family. So the guy came up with this conspiracy that the lawyer was coordinating with the government to take away his home. Hmm. And ever since the guy has gotten his home taken away in this high stress situation, he's been going further and further down the conspiracy rabbit hole. Now, over a decade later, he's one of the biggest Trump supporters. He's been to like 50 rallies.
Wow.
And it's because he lost his house in 2007.
No shit.
There's a whole documentary.
That's insane. Wait, I'd love to check that out. That's crazy. Again, I'm always so fascinated as someone who's just generally very passionate about mental health, how much like in a political time like this, psychology is playing such a role, especially for MAGA. It's like that kind of like cult mindset and why you dive into those things. Very interesting. I'll have to check that out.
We'll watch it tonight, maybe. Yeah. I've got some good news and I've got some bad news.
All right, let's hear it.
The bad news is that we've just hit our 1 hour mark. So we're going to have to move this over to the members only show. If you're watching on YouTube, become a member. If you're on Substack, you can go to Adam Mochler YouTube channel. If you're on YouTube, go to adamochler.com to check out the Substack. We're going to go talk about how we got into this. And by the way, guys, my Piers Morgan episode should drop later tonight. So later tonight, check the Piers Morgan channel. Sorry, I'm just excited about that. I want you guys to watch me on Piers Morgan. It's fun. So join the membership. We'll talk to you guys later. We'll see you Wednesday. I love you all.
Yes.
See you, Marzen. See you, Stephanie.
And also, before we end, mind if I say one more thing?
What's up?
Truly, Adam and I appreciate you so much. You guys are so kind. All donations, all love in the chat. You guys are the best. We're proud of you. We love you. And it always inspires us to see people in chat just as passionate as we are. So that's all I want to say. I love you guys.
And guys, listen, next stream, we're going to gift a bunch of memberships. We're going to make sure you guys can come watch after. Just be there Wednesday. Wednesday, turn on post notifications. See you.